Seattle on a beautiful, beautiful sunny day here.
Wow. Wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful.
Beautiful day in Alaska. Beautiful weather this whole week. So feeling pretty good.
Yeah. Good. Thanks. Great. Thank you so much. Well, hi, everyone who is joining us this morning on this beautiful, beautiful Sunday morning. My name is Maria Abando, and I am on the leadership team with Common Purpose. And for those of you that are still getting to learn a little bit about Common Purpose, we are a civic action organization that is located in Seattle, Washington. But we do voter registration work and voter mobilization work across the nation in swing states ahead of this 2020 election and many elections to come. We also do our work in community and in teams and also in support of our rising next generation leaders, because we got to be able to sustain this work for the long run. Joining us today also is Emily Carmichael, who is one of our state captains for the teams that we build that go out. We have 20 states that we are going to be doing work in this year. And although our traveling has been limited, we do have multiple lanes of remote civic field work that we've been doing in support of absentee and early voting in these states, other stuff with Washington State and some partnerships with other organizations on the ground. And we're hoping that you'll be able to hear a little bit about Elise and get excited to join us and join our Alaska team, which is headed up by Emily. Emily, do you want to say something to?
Yes. Yeah, I am the team lead for Alaska. So we're planning to go definitely in the lead up to the election this fall. And then we're hoping to also go at some point this summer. And we will have the pleasure of door knocking for Elise Galvin, who's on this call and who is running for U.S. Congress. And she's a really exciting candidate that I am so excited for you to meet today. I met her in the before times in February. We had coffee together in downtown Seattle, and it was an just really inspiring hour that we spent together. She and I have a lot in common. We're moms. We kind of got started in our political work by a passion for public school advocacy. And so just the time that I spent with her was really, really inspired me. And I hope that you all that are listening also get inspired to come with me to Alaska so that we can knock doors for Elise and flip a seat in U.S. Congress. She's running against someone who has had that seat for quite a while. He is the longest serving representative in Congress, if I'm not incorrect, Don Young. Alaska only has one congressional seat, so she would be representing the entire state. It's a really exciting prospect. And we're here today just to get to know you better, Elise, and ask you some questions about, you know, why you're running, what inspired you, all that good stuff. I'll let Maria start with a first question.
Great.
All right. And also Kevin as well.
Yes.
joining us from Alaska, that's correct. Hope he's muted.
Yep, that's
yeah. Well,
thank you, Malcolm. So Elise, can you talk to us a little bit about why you got into this race and what inspired you to get going?
Sure. I got into this race likely for the same reasons a lot of you are on this call right now. You were looking for change. You were frustrated. You have been doing everything you can to work within the system to bring change, to make sure that your leaders better reflect what you value. That's really, it's as simple as that. I was pulling my hair out after about 5.5 years of more than full-time volunteerism, doing a lot of the things that you've perhaps done. It became very clear to me that if we really want substantial, long-standing change, we need to change up who's behind the door, not opening the door for us, or not pulling the lever in the right way to better reflect what we value. It's really that simple. And so what I did was I joined a group called Alaska Women Ascend, thinking, all right, what I'm going to do is make sure that women, particularly women of color, are elected. That was my goal. And so after about 3.5 or 4 months of pretty rigorous study about how to get people elected, it became clear that we need people to step up. I couldn't, after, you know, God knows how many lunches I've had with people to encourage them to run, it wasn't happening. And when I studied what it would take, what kind of a candidate would win and could win in this district, I decided I'm the best fit for this. And at that juncture, my youngest was 18. I have 4 kids. And so I decided, you know what? I'm going to step up in a different way. I'm going to step up and serve.
That's great. Can you talk a little bit more about being a woman in politics and being a woman running for office and any unique challenges you may face?
Okay, so again, it's probably what you all face and you all know about. It's, if you want to raise money, you're going to have to work 2 or 3 times harder. It's a very difficult place to be in for some, because you hear no a lot. Everyone's going to question your ability and your resume and my haircut and my teeth. If I would just get my teeth, I mean, it just goes on and on. All of those things that you could imagine happen. But again, I've been through so much of this just through at my advocacy work that it's, you know, I've got the grit and I don't care. I don't have that kind of a ego where it's going to bring me down. It is, though, true. You all, I'm sure, have experienced this as women, or any, if you're of color, if you're any kind of a group where you're not the typical white man, it is going to be tricky. And I should say straight white man. Anyhow, but it's doable. It just means that we need to bring ourselves together in a stronger, much more intentional way and grow relationships through talking about what matters. And so that's what I've been doing a lot throughout Alaska is, gee, don't you want your kid to be able to have their kids right here in this state? Gee, don't you want to make sure? And so then we get to talking about jobs, and we get to talking about how we're experiencing climate at twice what everyone else. So I just kind of move the topic to what I know people care about and what we have in common. And that helps me feel as though we're getting through every gate. It's just taking a little extra work.
And you have run before. So could you talk a little bit about how that's informing what you're doing right now?
You bet. Yeah. So I did run in 18. That was my first run. I ran against Don Young then. And at that point, he was 46 years in. Now he's 40, almost 48 years in Congress, if you can imagine.
A lot of people, it's older than me.
Right. So, you know, last cycle when I ran, you were asking the difference. Is that it?
Yeah, just how that's informed what you're doing now and what, you know, the difference between last cycle and this. And
right.
I think don't realize, you know, they'll say, well, she ran and lost. Why is she doing it again? They don't realize that running and losing is a big indicator of actually running and winning in the future. Yeah,
indeed, especially if you get as close as we got. We're very fortunate. We got to 47, just about 47% of the vote, more than anyone in over 30 years. And we did it in a way that allowed us to be able to look. Now we can look at all the data to know where we need to go from here. So it, because I am an organizer, I did a lot of work with public education. We had a huge group of people. Now already we know that there are more even than it was about 1,100 volunteers. We expect even more this time, which we need. We're in a state that's twice the size of Texas, if you all can imagine. That's my one district, twice the size of Texas. So in some of the places, you know, I would fly in a small plane, then I would get on a boat and then a four-wheeler to get to the village. So naturally, I wasn't able to really get to as many people as I was hoping to get to. I got to 47% of the vote because we did pretty well doing it, but not as much as we need to. So we're going to build upon what we've already started and finish the job, essentially. We started earlier this time because last cycle, it was a first timer for me. I didn't realize how much time it's going to take, first of all, to raise the resources. So many voters choose because of a radio ad or a television ad or something they've seen on screen. And so I didn't recognize all of that and how important that was. So this time I'm in earlier to make sure I take care of the resource part. I'm also in it earlier to make sure that we're getting the organizational piece in place so that we're really intentional with our actions of all of these people. At that time, I wasn't sure. Kevin is on the line with us and he'll be able to explain a little bit of that. Let me just add one other thing before that is that I recognize that with many Alaskans who have built this kind of long-term pattern of voting for Don Young, they needed the longer conversations, the real meaningful, almost not just an interaction, but a relationship. And now's where I'm going to pass it off to Kevin, who can better explain, if that's okay, how we plan to organize a little differently that's a lot more intentional. Kevin, thanks for being here.
Yeah, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah. Thank you, Emily, Maria, and thank you, Elise, for that intro. I'm Kevin Groh. I am the interim organizing director for Elise Galvin's campaign. I'm a native Alaskan. I'm up here in Anchorage, Alaska right now. Thank you for everyone who is joining us. You know, like Elise was just said, you know, we got to 47% of the vote in 2018, only was short about 18,000 votes, which is really not a lot of votes. And so as Elise was saying, this year we are going to have more field organizers on the ground than we had in 2018. And we're gonna be running an organizing program that is really, I think, well-suited for, like Elise said, the type of relationships and conversations that we're going to need to build to really persuade people here in Alaska. We are really going to be focusing on asking our volunteers and supporters in Alaska to do the persuasion that we need within their network of friends and family. We know that someone talking to their friend or their family member about a issue or a candidate or their values, it's just more likely to actually persuade someone than, you know, a cold contact from someone that they don't know. And, you know, that is important. Door knocking and phone calling is going to be really important to help us to get out the vote and to have the amount of conversations that we need. But we are going to be laser focused on also having relational conversations, which is something that has been picking up more and more steam in grassroots organizing and advocacy over the past years. And there's more and more folks who are incorporating that as part of their grassroots campaigns. And we are really going to be laser focused on some of the areas and the demographics where, you know, we didn't meet our marks in 2018 and where we know that we need to persuade some folks here, get out some more folks to vote here for us to be able to win this year in 2020. And, you know, volunteers and supporters like folks on this call are going to be critical for us. Your ability to target the voters and the areas that we need through phone calling or door knocking are going to be really important. And we will make sure that your time that you commit to this campaign is laser focused to the efforts and the areas where we need your help to win. So I want to make sure you all know that. We appreciate your support so much.
If I can add a little bit to that for a moment, Emily and Maria, I do want to mention that Kevin was the organizing director for Pete Buttigieg in Iowa. He's very humble and not sharing that, but he very much knows his work and is on the forefront of the nation for this work. And I cannot share enough how incredibly fortunate we are. So I think we're all going to be learning. We're going to be kind of frontline learning some things that have been done recently that haven't been done anywhere else in the nation, other than perhaps Iowa and a couple of others. But it's going to be a really good opportunity for us. We have what's unusual and great about this run before, which since you mentioned the second run, is we do, as Kevin alluded to, have incredible data that tells us where we know if we had better turnout, we would take the extra 4,000 votes, for example, or, you know, in different regions that was just crystal clear. In Southeast, for example, my goodness, we brought it on home. But the turnout, unlike the lower 48 in 2018, was low. It was the lowest in 10 years for Alaska. So if we were to be able to just stir that up quite a bit in certain regions, we know we've got many thousands of votes. So it's a really interesting puzzle. We see a very clear pathway to victory, but it's going to be all about people like you and our team pulling together to make sure that they know how powerful their vote is.
And you have automatic voter registration now, which had not kicked in, or maybe it had kicked in for the 2018 election, but there wasn't a lot of outreach that year, as far as I've understood, for people to understand, like, you are registered to vote now and here's where you vote. So that's some of what we've been working on. We're working with our partner organization in Alaska, is the Alaska Center in Anchorage. Mm-hmm. So that's where they're really focusing on making sure that the people that are now registered to vote actually are aware of that and do turn out. And so I feel like your 18,000 votes, they've got to be in there somewhere.
Oh yeah. I mean, it's almost like, did you know you're part of the club? You're part of the voting club. And here, let me help you sign up for that absentee ballot right now, right? Yeah. And how powerful that would be. I mean, truly, that would be amazing if we could get a team like yours on that. It would be everything. So I'm really excited to hear that there's some energy for making sure that our great state is led and has a team behind it that appreciates how amazing this opportunity is.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're behind you. And I appreciate, Kevin, your mentioning of your commitment to our volunteers. And I would just want to return that expression back to you. We are going to do what we can to help you guys out. So thank you so much. And you mentioned as well that, you know, some challenges that you had faced previously were the distance and the size of your state and the need for more deeper conversations and a little bit of persuasion. Can you, either of you, Kevin or Elise, talk to me a little bit more about some other challenges that you feel like you'd be facing?
Let's see. So I'll mention what I can think of in terms of challenges. Well, we're in a world pandemic.
Yeah.
I can't believe all of you are up this morning. I'm so grateful that you believe in better, that you're here, that you're not just thinking about your own home and neighborhood, but you're recognizing, you know, how important it is that we find leadership on the federal level that's willing to pull in a coordinated way to make such a huge difference. So the challenge is obvious, right? People are, for the first time, very concerned about a world pandemic. We are experiencing what you could imagine economically in a state where we've been reliant upon not just oil and gas, but tourism and fisheries. And so we're trying to figure out how to deal with all of that. So our minds may not be on politics. That's going to be a challenge. We're doing what we can as a campaign to appreciate that and to become helpers as much as possible. So our whole staff and many volunteers have been picking up the phone and just doing well calls. How are you doing throughout the entire state? And Kevin, you can touch on that maybe a little bit more. We're also, I'm doing town halls around coronavirus issues, everything from, are you unemployed for the first time? You know, what, let me tell you how you can sign up for unemployment. Let me tell you how you can seek help for food, help for housing, all of these different things. And it's not me. What I do is I bring in an expert from the state so that Alaskans can be connected to an Alaskan expert to help navigate what they're experiencing in coronavirus times. So it's a challenge. We're working with it. And Kevin, do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, I would say a couple of things are that, you know, as Elise mentioned, we have volunteers that make calls to voters to check in on them, see how they're doing, see if they can connect them to any resources. We also have volunteers and supporters of Elise's campaign here in Alaska who have been essentially joining in with pre-existing mutual aid networks here, just, you know, kind of not really in a campaign capacity, but they are supporters of Elise or volunteers who are pitching in mutual aid networks here in the greater Anchorage area, here in Alaska. And as Elise mentioned, you know, going forward, Alaska is going to be a state that is going to be hit pretty hard, we think, economically, from the coronavirus, some of our major industries here, from tourism to oil production to fishing, you know, they're all hit really hard by this current situation. And so Alaskans, we think, are going to be hurting, and we really need to think carefully about how we're engaging on this campaign and showing that Elise is going to be, you know, a better candidate on these issues to help Alaska to navigate a difficult path ahead. You know, we assume that at least for a good couple of weeks or maybe another month or two, we don't really know, that we will, you know, not be having in-person campaign events. And so as Elise mentioned, she's been having a ton of really interesting, well-attended online town halls where she is comes on with an expert on various issues to engage and take questions from Alaskans. And in May and June, we'll be launching more programs to engage voters and volunteers on Zoom calls and other virtual ways to engage folks. So we are threading this needle of building our organization and also, you know, bringing Alaskans the resources that they need during this difficult time and approaching them in a way that's appropriate when a lot of Alaskans are going to be hurting economically and, you know, anxious about the health impacts of this virus for, you know, weeks and months to come.
Thanks for that thoughtful response. You mentioned jobs earlier as being an issue that's really important to Alaskans. What are some of the other top pressing issues in this campaign, especially as that relates to your opponent?
Mm-hmm.
How are you different from
right? So jobs, healthcare, and of course our planet. What's happening in climate? And the two of us are on opposite ends, just to be clear. And so there's like very little. Space in the middle, because he's so far right leaning. So he's voted against everything related to the Affordable Care Act, would love to just get rid of it, but has no ideas of what to put in. With climate, he still thinks that God is going to fix it. It's really interesting. But we have a state that is pretty much in denial too, at least maybe 40% of them, 60% are very much more progressive. Healthcare, back to that, women's care, I mean, he's completely against choice. He's not been, he's very nuanced in his messaging. He has a good staff that helps him avoid the reality, the truth of where he is. And so that's a challenge for us to make sure that we help differentiate in a way that's not screaming and shouting. That's the one thing that Alaskans are, is they're moderate in the way that they do not want to see the fighting in politics. And so to help differentiate yourself in a way that's sensible and civil is really important here in this state. And so I've been working very hard to establish that kind of a voice that just says, look, what's important to me is that we look at science-based data and make decisions that are appropriate. We need to thank what we've received from oil and gas and even mining, but then we need to make really responsible decisions ahead of us. I mean, look at the global economy, and I'll just kind of move us in that kind of a conversation in that way. And it's really important that we do that so that we are pulling the persuadables into our corner. It is a nuanced trick, not a trick, it's a truth, but it has to be done tenderly, and it's really important that we do it in order to get to the win.
All right. Thank you. And then we had another, I'm looking at our Q&A that are coming in from the participants in this call. There was a question about the geographical areas that you were mentioning earlier, places that you needed to target where the turnout had not been as high, or you know, where you knew there were votes there, but you didn't get them. Where are those areas?
Okay. Well, Kevin may know more. I'll share a little bit about what I know with the data. Dillingham, I spent a couple of hours there only, and I know because I am against the Pebble Mine. The vast majority, 75% plus, are against Pebble Mine. We need to be very clear there and get those extra votes. And I didn't get to spend time either. Similarly, there's some area we know we can get more in Fairbanks, in Utqiagvik or Barrow in the northern region. I did not get to go there at all. So interestingly, we looked at the map, and some of it was that I'd never even been there. Some other pieces were about turnout. So Juneau, for example, in that whole southeast region, we were able to kind of do the math. If we have a typical turnout, in fact, we've done some really good work on data looking at what we predict will be a 2020 electorate, and we overlaid that on the 2018, and that put us in a dead heat. So we know this is a very close race if we get the predicted turnout of a presidential election. It's very, very exciting to know that. In fact, that's what drew me to run. Yeah, I did not want to run and ask anyone for another dime unless I knew, you know, this there was a clear pathway. And that's really what brought me to know we can do this. Kevin, I'm going to ask if you have any more on that.
I think, Elise, you covered a lot of it. I think that we also know that there, here in Alaska, the Mat-Su Valley, which are this collection of towns and small cities right outside of Anchorage, they're kind of, I mean, not quite suburban in the way we think of it in the lower 48, as we call it. But there, you know, some areas that are right outside of Anchorage, the biggest city here in Alaska, and there are definitely a lot of persuadable voters there. Just like there are in some suburb, you know, many suburban areas around the country. And we know that there's swing voters there who really could go either way. So that's, and you know, every voter you swing is almost like two votes out of that 18,000 votes that we need to close that gap. And so we know that there are persuadable voters in this area. Mat-Su, it's about 45-minute drive outside of Anchorage, just to the north.
As common purpose, we will be based out of Anchorage, so that's totally a possibility. We could be making that drive, and canvassing in that area. So it's just going to depend on where our partner organization sends us. But
yeah,
people on the call are curious about that.
That's good. There were two areas of Alaska in 18 where there was the highest turnout ever in those two regions. And this isn't, you can't look at percentages because of what you talked about earlier, the automated, automatic voter turnout or registration. Mm-hmm. So just looking at sheer numbers of turnout for that area, there were two regions that had significantly higher turnout. And that was the Mat-Su and Kenai region last cycle. And we know that was because a lot of money was spent in those two regions, essentially against something called a salmon initiative. And unfortunately, it was just one of those things that there's an initiative which drew people. The messaging to them was you need to vote no on one, which is... it was an initiative set up to save or protect salmon habitat. It's a convoluted, longer story, but that's what it was about. So the message was vote no on one, vote yes on Dunleavy, our very unusual governor, and yes on...
He's recalled, right?
Yeah, he's getting recalled. And yes on Young, or you will lose your job. So the messaging was very effective. And it drew in, according to those who are working at polls, they said they'd never seen so many young workers coming in to vote. So this is our new reality, and we'll need to be aware of that and thinking about that. There's another petition that may draw similar energy, and we'll need to be very attentive to that. There's so much work that could be done with a group like yours in thinking about how we can get our folks signed up for at-home voting, at-home or secure voting. There is a lot of research now from Alaska now, even so 40% of Alaska is in Anchorage. And we've had some vote by mail in our municipal elections.
That's what we were supposed to go to campaign in those elections, but we weren't able to because of the pandemic.
Got it. Well, thank you for that effort. So the good news is that in Anchorage, where we've seen vote by mail as a whole, has had record turnouts the first election, and so we know that when in a community like this, we do have 110 languages. So you could imagine there are some challenges for some voters, and that home voting is helpful. So we're really excited if we could manage to get that vote by home statewide, and we think that would be very advantageous.
And the legislature is working on putting that in place right now, or trying to get that approved, or is it on a municipality? Like, how is that?
Good question. It is going to be, for our election, it'll be a statewide decision.
Okay.
Right now, so far, we know that it's likely that the primary will be a vote by mail.
Okay.
Unfortunately, let's remember our governor's getting recalled. This is all up to the lieutenant governor, pretty much. And so if turnout turns out to be... not in to their advantage, we're concerned that they will then, and they'll use the excuse that it's just too expensive. That's our worry. We don't know enough about it. Maybe Kevin knows more. Do you know anything else on that? Have we learned?
You know, I have just been hearing from folks, from some of the members of the State House here in Alaska, who I know that they think it's very possible that we'll have all vote by mail in the general election. I've heard more than a 50-50 chance, but you know, we just really don't know. And unfortunately, Republicans in the state may try to game the system, try to wait until they figure out what would be most advantageous for their political prospects. It's just hard to know. It's hard to plan around, but we're hoping it's possible we'll have all vote by mail in the general.
What we do have already in place, which may help us, is you don't have to have an excuse for absentee ballots.
Right. That's right.
So that is doable. So thinking through our timing, we may not have time to wait to hear whether or not they're going to be doing the vote by mail. I can tell you though, they're very, very political. And I've heard a more recent update that the Lieutenant Governor's chief of staff, who is extremely political, has pulled into this conversation and is leading them down a different road. So it's going to be tricky, but we know we've got a great advantage because you don't have to have a reason to sign up for absentee balloting.
Yeah, that's so important. And I appreciate you guys spending some time talking about that, because Common Purpose has been so focused since being in shelter in place here on our advocacy initiative, which has been calling, which has been emailing, tweeting the governors and the senators and the secretary of states in 27 states across the nation to be able to have that no excuse absentee voting mail-in ballot and increasing that early voting period. So it sounds like it's going to be really key for you guys. And you mentioned absentee voting at the mail-in ballots. You've mentioned, those specific regions, those key areas. We have a question here in our Q&A that asks about, what is the theory of how to beat Don Young? What is that path to victory? Other than those things, do you think there are any other key things that we should know about?
Sure. So of course, it's going to be about turnout, and we've talked about ways we're going to get through to that. Also, it's going to be making sure that our work on the broad scale of media and mail is done well and very much more targeted in ways that we know will hit our persuadables. So for the first time, I can't believe we did this, but we did it. We spent a lot of money on focus groups. I now understand how important they are. I'm learning about these things. And so we need to hear from those people who are not strong Don, not strong Elise, but do vote. And so we had a professional, Linda Lake. I don't know if you know her. She does a lot of the work for Planned Parenthood and from Lake Research. She's done some really intense work to know what the persuadable voter is thinking. Mm-hmm. And that feeds into our very strong media, which is different than last cycle. We have Mark Putnam, who was raised in Alaska, but is known for his viral, incredible work for television ads, et cetera. So that has to be done right. We also are, we know that that's going to be really how we're going to pull in that wedge between last cycle and this cycle. We went from 11% name recognition to 79% with a very high favorability. So if they've heard of me, they tended to feel positive, and it worked out really well in our direction. So now we're going to build upon that. Typically there's slippage, and there is this time in the next race. And so it slipped back, which is good for us, believe it or not, because it means that we know now, even though my polling is in a very good place, we're neck and neck. And so even with that, we know that the more they get to know me, if done right, with the right key messages, we'll have an incredible opportunity to turn those persuadables. So that's another important piece of it. And that's what we'll be using. So we're excited about that. We're a lot of different things that we're doing too are work with that Kevin is doing to train all of the trainers in the state to become more conversant with this work of the style of organizing that is relational. And it's been, you know, really, really good for us. But it's a combination of all of those things, what our team's doing. I've been doing things a little differently too, becoming more vulnerable, believe it or not. It's not easy to do this, but I've learned that people need to understand why I have the fire in me. And I wasn't as comfortable with that in the past, but I've gotten some training and just decided that if I'm going to jump off this cliff, I've got to do it. Everybody else is doing it with me. And so I need to be honest about my fire, why I have the fire. So I've shared a little bit more of my story and also the resilience that comes with my difficult upbringing. So I had some really rough times when I was early on. And like many families, we had addictions in our family and all of the things that come with that. There was really severe violence and things like that. So I've been able to talk about that in a way that I think helps people recognize that I'm authentic, I'm real, you get what you see here. And that I think is making a little difference too. So anyway, it's all of these things put together that make us excited to know that change is coming in a way that's very important for Alaska. And I'm really honored to be here. There's another question here around ties with and views of Al Gross. Mm-hmm. So Al is running for Senate. This is important because it's the same district. He's running against Dan Sullivan, and he too is an independent. I think he is. I'm pretty sure he is. And he is a physician and a fisherman. So he brings with him a different set of people who will be energized to vote. So there will be a lot of synergy there between us. I've known his wife for, gosh, at least 25 years. We were in a nursing group together back when I lived in Juneau. So my third child and her third child, I think we were together in it. So we know each other well. We are running, you know, separate races, but there will be a lot of good synergy, and the better he does, the better we'll all do. So we're excited. It brings extra resources into our state that I think will be very helpful for turning this seat.
And we'll, for common purpose, volunteers interested in going to Alaska, we will also be supporting Al Gross's campaign. So it's really a twofer. We could flip a House seat and a Senate seat, and I just couldn't be more excited. You had mentioned spending money on focus groups, which I'm sure was a lot.
It's just so much. Yeah.
But speaking of money, you have outraised your opponent 2-1. That right. was true. You told me that in February, and then I saw that with the recent data, it continues to be true. So that's a really impressive feat. It's interesting because he's been in the legislature, in Congress, excuse me, for such a long time and has not amassed this huge, you know, war chest that they say.
Right.
Could you talk a little bit more about that? I mean, does that, yeah.
Sure. Right. It has been in for 47 years. So you would expect that he would have a huge war chest. Well, he ran against me last time and he had to spend it down. I was a real viable race, and I'm, you know, thanks to everybody for being a part of that. This time, then, I continued to work hard to ensure that we have the resources. So last cycle, I raised $2.1 million. Again, that's without the help of any large, DCCC didn't pull in, Emily's List didn't pull in. None of those groups came in because I was, unknown by anybody. But we did it from individuals. What we did get was teachers, of course, educators, NEA came in, Planned Parenthood came in, groups where, you know, I have such obvious alignment jumped in. But that was about 3% of the vote. So I share some of these details with you because I think it helps you to understand the excitement of people in Alaska for change. We have more Alaskan givers than ever in the history of any U.S. House race. So we're very, very excited about that. People have pitched in. It's not a culture of political giving up here. I know I have to raise a lot of my money out of Alaska. I get that. But to be seeing so many Alaskans pitch in a little bit They're putting a little skin in the game in ways we haven't seen before. It just pronounces even more how ready Alaska is for change. Don Young used to be in seats of power. So he had, you know, he was the chair of transportation. He was the chair of all sorts of things, which would bring him money easily. Because of course people were trying to get influence. In this case, he's not, he's in the minority. Two-thirds of his money is still coming from outside. It's still coming from PACs, two-thirds. I'm not taking a dime from corporate PACs. I really want Alaskans to know who I'm working for. I want Americans to know who I'm working for. I can't wait to change that system. And I mean, really change it. It's not just that we're allowed to take corporate PAC money. It's that we're allowed to step right into a position of lobbyist right after. All of these different things that have, I'm going to use the word rigged our system. And I think if I walk that talk of really, you know, being independently working for Alaskans and Americans in a way that I think will restore integrity in democracy, Alaskans get that. They love the idea that we're not being bought out by anybody else, that I'm really doing public service as I am doing. So I'm kind of walking that talk, but it is going to take money. I have to raise $4 million this time. Last time it was 2.1, but we recognize that if we really want to saturate the market and win this and hire more organizers for Kevin to do his work right, it means that we're going to have to do this by raising a little bit more. So in fact, twice as much. We did raise two times Don Young the last three quarters. And for the first time, we think in 47 years at this point, especially, we have more cash on hand than he has. So this is a significant barrier to breakthrough. We think it should get a lot of attention by the DCCC and Emily's List, especially once they pair that with our polling. So that hopefully will come in time, and that'll help us get to that 4 million, but we don't know. You know, we're just going to keep going and doing our best to make sure we get there.
Great. Well, I also want to say thank you, Elise. I know you had only had about half an hour with us, so thank you for
no problem.
All of your time, and you just let us know if you need to head out, but we'll keep on with a couple more questions if that's okay.
Okay, sure.
Thank you. So, and Kevin as well, either of you, what are the big issues, those top issues on Alaskans' mind? You mentioned education was something that you're really focusing on. What are the other top things?
Thanks for mentioning that. So, well, remember, we're in a pandemic. And so, of course, healthcare right now in this time, and you probably have all talked about this at your kitchen table, it amplifies every problem. It makes us realize the inequities that aren't just in healthcare, that aren't just in education, but are also even in job opportunities. And I feel, we're still working on our data that should come out next week to know for sure that this is even where the persuadables are, but everybody wants to take care of their family. So that's a job, that's housing, that's education. And there's a lot of research to know for early families that also is a matter of patching them to information about how to raise kids and how to be connected in a way that grows their opportunities as the first, really first educators for their children. So all of that, I think, is important to Alaska. I would say jobs first, particularly given our situation. I can't tell you enough what it's like. We've already had almost twice the unemployment as the lower 48. That's before the pandemic. Almost twice the unemployment. Interestingly, and here's a data point that a lot of Alaskans, their eyeballs pop out. Just over a quarter of those jobs here in Alaska that are held by non-Alaskans. So This means education becomes a really important piece to us. Are we preparing our kids to really get this great opportunities for these good jobs? Because typically they are the better jobs. What are we doing? Do we not have, my thing is believe in better. Let's do this. There's good in public services. There's good in that. I think what's really holding us back is this fear and distrust of public services. And my goal is to help us understand that this is what is going to drive us into a stronger economy, a stronger America. So I know that's sort of a long-winded political answer. I'm sorry, but I feel so strongly about this. We're going to grow our own, and we're going to feel proud, and we're going to feel like we have strong families, because that is ultimately, at the end of the day, what makes us all feel good about ourselves and our country.
Great. Thank you. You are from Alaska. You grew up in Anchorage, right? Mm-hmm. How important is that, do you feel, in the race? I've had a lot of conversations with Alaskans in the last several months as I've been planning these trips and getting to know our partner organizations and our candidates. And I keep hearing this message, Alaska is different. And it feels like it's really important for people to have somebody that they feel like, you know, grew up where they did and knows the situation in that state. How do you get that message across, and what's the reaction? Can you just talk a little bit about that so that our team can get a sense of what it's like?
Yeah. So it's one thing to know that, you know, all of the things you read about, oh gosh, it's twice the size of Texas and then a little bit more. And they have, you know, minus 30 degree weather, minus 50 in some places. They have five different climates. We have climate change at twice the rate of the lower 48. We have 229 indigenous, federally recognized indigenous tribes, 229, as much as the rest of the entire nation. In Anchorage alone, we have five of the top most diverse high schools in the entire nation. A lot of people don't know that, but we happen to be a real friendly state, taking in a lot of refugees over time, over the last 30 years. So we've got this really complex state, some of it because of the way where we are just geographically, some of it because of how we've developed as a brand new state. We're new from 1959 with statehood. That's really new. Some of it because, you know, we brought in our white person's brick and mortar education into this world really recently, that had been doing their education just fine in a completely different way. So there, you know, sovereignty becomes an issue, all of these different things. So if you had a sense that that person who's running for Congress to represent Alaska is a third generation Alaskan, which I am, and my family came up serving in World War II. So that's a whole nother dynamic that people appreciate. But it still doesn't bring me to always, I still need to work really hard to help those who are in rural Alaska appreciate that I am ready to represent them. So there's challenges, but there's also some great advantages for me being the candidate here in Alaska. And mostly it's advantages, particularly when you put me side by side with Don Young. It's complex, and I'm excited to be able to be, you know, working this and earning the trust. It's going to take that. And it's going to take people like you helping others appreciate our opportunity here for change. A lot of people are just looking for change at this point, especially when we see our economy and people really worried. In Alaska, the epidemic of 1918, you know, wiped out entire villages. People remember that. this is just the second generation after that. So as much as we would like to respect and thank the government for some things we're very worried about, whatever it is, white people. So, you know, it takes time. It takes people to know, oh yeah, she's been here. Oh, she's done work in rural Alaska. I didn't know that. She worked in four villages. Those sorts of things really matter to Alaskans. So and I think it's tricky because Don Young has been there for 47 years. That means his staff has done a pretty good job writing a lot of letters to a lot of different people.
That's very true.
But a lot of them have aged out too.
Yeah. I can imagine. It's a long time to be in office.
Totally. Well, so you mentioned that 229 recognized tribes and all of that diversity in the schools. How does that impact your campaigning, or how does that make your strategies different or unique from some of the stuff in other states?
Well, I have really been fortunate to have done this work in public education early on. I was before the state of Alaska came up with longitudinal kind of look back of how we're doing in Alaska serving various ethnic groups. I had done longitudinal study and came up with graphs. And so I'm kind of known as that lady who keeps saying, you know, look at what's happening in our education system. It's gonna make us weak, and we've got to put resources in places that matter. So people are kind of know me as somebody who will speak up just to truth. And I think that may help. It's still going to be tricky though, because you know, the reality is there that not everybody feels comfortable with our government system, where we have to engender trust. And that is going to take relationships, which Kevin's talked about. I can't blame them. I mean, I really can't. It's all they have to do is look back at their life and see day after day, there's been some issues. So maybe Kevin has more to speak to that.
I think what Elise said is really right about her just history here in Alaska, her history of activism, her deep ties to the community here in Anchorage. And, you know, while we are going to be running an organizing program that is very focused on relational organizing, of having our supporters reaching out to their friends and family about Elise, you know, we want to be cognizant of sometimes if your supporters are people from a certain demographic or a certain, you know, a certain group of people, you don't want to confine in the outreach that you're doing based on that. You know, you don't want to create echo chambers among your supporters. So we are going to be really cognizant of making sure that even though we know that relational voter contact is going to be so effective, we have to get into communities where we need Elise's message to get out. And that's something that we've already been doing. Our organizers here on the ground, we have two organizers on the ground now who have been having Zoom one-on-ones just in the last couple of weeks with some of the Filipino American community leaders here in Anchorage. And we know that we can't rely on just the relational, the networks of our current supporters if they're not going to get us into all communities around the state, of which there are so many diverse communities. So it's something that we are cognizant of and, you know, approaching intentionally in 2020.
And Maria, I'm going to share one other piece, and that is that it's critical that we're listening, not just kind of coming out. So some of the things that I do maybe differently than other candidates is I had been doing weekly coffees, specifically inviting different groups in. And in those coffees, I ask very open-ended questions. So it's not a matter of me just going na 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 about politics, but really just saying, where are you guys at? Tell me about what's going on. And I have to share that I think is the most effective. So we'll be doing that virtually, which is strange, but we have to. I remember, I'm just the last one I did, the very last one, we had I think maybe 8 people showed up. This was at a coffee in Eagle River. And so it's a very, very strongly right-leaning community, just happened to be. And 3 of the people didn't say a word. And these others shared their usual education, healthcare, and climate worries. And then I decided to ask around the horn. So a very specific question, so everybody had to speak. And in doing that, a woman who is maybe in her 60s said, "Well, I'm just going to say that I feel like I'm 11 again." And I said, what do you mean? And she said, "Well, you have no idea how hard it is to be a gay person now." And the person right next to her was Hispanic. And he said not the same thing. He just, in his world, it was more about economy issues, that he doesn't think he has the same chance to get a job. But for her, what I'm saying is these stories would never come out. Oops, I'm not hearing you.
Sorry, that was my fault.
Don't worry. So I'm just sharing that to listen, I think, or create more opportunities for that, where they're able to share what they're experiencing, I think will also be very critical at this time. And I didn't hear what you had to say. I'm sorry, Maria. And I think we probably need to go.
Yeah, I was going to say, thank you so much for coming on and giving us a very valuable hour of your time. I know that you're incredibly busy trying to get out there and talk to as many people as you can. And we are excited to come to Alaska. We hope that things keep developing, keep going in the right direction, and that we're going to be able to travel. We're planning to come in the summer, probably in August, and probably around the primary, and then we'll definitely plan to be there when early voting starts. Early voting starts October 20th, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, but we'll plan to be there at that point and get as many people to turn those ballots in and vote for Elise Galvin. So thank you a lot for your time, both of y'all, Kevin and Elise, and we look forward to seeing you soon. And thank you, everybody who was on the call, and for your thoughtful questions.
Thanks, everyone.
Sorry about that.
Great Sunday.
It's such an honor.
Yeah, it really was an honor. We appreciate it a lot.
Thank you so much to every one of you.